So next up, we have, is it Tegan?
Tegan
Evans, sorry, who's the project director from Health Advocates as a vehicle to improve treatment for smokers in public housing research project, which is funded by the NIH and the National Cancer Institute. She's a graduate of Boston University School of Public Health and has expertise in the training and implementation of community health workers in low socioeconomic position communities. She has published her use of the community health workers and research interventions to increase access to health resources by residents of low-income communities.
Welcome. Good morning. Thank you for being here. So my name is Tegan Evans, and I'm here from Boston University School of Public Health. And today we're going to be talking about the effects of policy change on smoking status for Boston public housing residents. So I'm not sure how many people are familiar, but Boston Housing Authority is one of the largest authorities in the nation that has gone smoke-free, and they've implemented a smoke-free policy. So to just give you a little bit of background on how that happened, in 2010, Boston Housing Authority actually proposed this non-smoking policy. And within that policy, it stated that there would be no smoking in apartments, common areas, hallways, and a perimeter around the, each of the housing developments, or I should say, each of the buildings within the developments, so still smoking with on the property, but in designated areas. In August of 2011, HUD actually went ahead and approved this policy change. And then shortly after, in January of 2012, BHA actually started having residents sign this addendum to their lease. And within that, it also stated that violators of the policy could be fined up to $250, and there was the possibility of eviction as well. And then September 29th of 2012, the ban went into effect. So this analysis is part of a larger study that is the Kick It for Good study, and it's a group randomized smoking cessation trial, and it's designed to test whether public housing residents trained as TTAs or tobacco treatment advocates can increase utilization of smoking cessation resources such as the Quit Line, hospital or community health center-based cessation counseling programs, group and individual. As well as nicotine replacement therapy, and also to increase smoking cessation rates among smokers in Boston public housing. For the study, we enrolled 506 smokers completed baseline, and all of those smokers, part of the enrollment criteria was that they were planning to quit smoking in the next 30 days or thinking about quitting smoking in the next 6 months. 333 were considered enrolled for our analysis. So in order to be considered enrolled, a participant has to complete at least one visit with a tobacco treatment advocate. And so 164 participants were randomized to the intervention, and 169 were randomized into the control. So data collection for this project was collected at baseline 3, 7, and 12 months. And then all of our tobacco treatment advocate intervention and control visits were audio taped. And we do that for adherence to protocol and motivational interviewing principles in the intervention arm. There's two main differences between this control and intervention arm, and without going into too much detail, it's really between the number of visits and the nature of those visits. So in the control visit, participants are getting one visit where they're getting some information, and it's a very directed visit, and that's really all that they're getting. In the intervention arm, there's anywhere from 1 to 9 visits, and those visits, the TTA uses motivational interviewing principles as a platform for their counseling, and they really kind of explore ambivalence, motivation to quit, confidence in quitting, and things of that nature, as well as navigate participants into health resources if they're interested. So the goal of this analysis was to examine residents' knowledge and attitudes about the forthcoming smoking ban and after it had been implemented. So we did a mixed method analysis, both quantitative and qualitative. The sources of our quantitative were questions that were added to the baseline 3, 7, and 12-month questionnaires of the study. And those questions ranged from understanding of the implementation of the policy and to a participant's community, what the policy meant, and then how that influenced their potentially influenced their quit attempts and whether they thought it was a good or bad idea. The sources of the qualitative data were one optional written question that was included in those follow-up surveys and the audio tapes from the intervention subjects in the counseling sessions. So just to give you an idea of a timeline for when we're looking at analysis, in October of 2011, here is when we started actually recruiting for the Kick It for Good project. And then you see January 2012, that's when BHA started to have residents sign those lease addendums about the smoking policy. And then in July of 2012, we started adding these questions to the questionnaires to get a better idea of our participants' understanding. So when we talk about pre-policy and post-policy, the pre-policy is that time between July of 2012 and October 1st of 2012. That's the pre-policy period, and post-policy is anything October 1st on. Okay. So this just gives you an idea of the overall demographics of the participants that answered these questions. Over half, about 60%, were female, and then the different age groups fairly equal. Large, the majority were black, but also white and Hispanic. About half had children, half did not. And for the majority of participants, a high school GED or below was the highest education level. So we're going to talk about each of the groups of questions and then the responses that we saw pre and post, but these are the first two questions, actually. So the number one being, have you heard of the Boston Housing Authority's smoke-free policy? And this is just to see if people are aware of it. And then depending on if the participant answered these questions pre-policy or post-policy, they may have gotten, do you expect the policy to be put in place in your development, or has the policy been put in place? So for pre-policy, we see that 100% of people had heard of the policy, and the majority of them actually thought that the policy would be put in place in their community, and then post-policy, we see about the same thing. So here we ask some true and false questions, and this is really about people's understanding of the policy. So no smoking in common indoor areas such as offices and hallways. The correct answers are bolded there in blue, so that's a true response. No smoking in apartments, which is true. No smoking outside near entrances to buildings, that's also true. No smoking anywhere on the grounds of the development, that's a false statement. And all public housing residents must quit smoking if they currently smoke. That is also a false statement. So we see here pre-policy, the majority of people seem to understand that there's no smoking in common areas, apartments, and near the entrances, but nowhere on the grounds, there are not as many people answered that correctly, as well as that residents must quit smoking to continue living in public housing. When we look post-policy, it's we expect it to increase after the policy's been implemented, but I think the most interesting is the last two again, where nowhere on the grounds or residents must quit to remain in public housing. It's obviously increased, but there's still quite a few people who are responding that incorrectly to those answers. So the next three are really to understand how the policy impacted their quit attempt and their thoughts about the policy, and if they wanted to elaborate on that in the one written question. Has your interest in quitting smoking been affected by policy? And so they could answer, not at all, somewhat, very much. Do you think the policy is a good idea or bad idea? And then why do you think that's a good idea or bad idea? Oops. Okay. Okay, so in terms of policy and interest in quitting smoking, you see that there's Pre-policy, quite a few people kind of fall into this somewhat and very much. And then post-policy, it's kind of reduced. And so 65% of all pre-policy participants said that the policy was affecting their decision to quit smoking, and 32% of post-poly participants, policy participants. So, you know, what to make of this, you know, when we talk about the qualitative findings, we can kind of potentially add some information here, but possibly that the anticipation of the policy was driving those larger numbers in the pre-policy group. For the whether they thought it was a good idea or a bad idea, so I think that the no feelings or good idea is a little bit less interesting as the bad idea. So people who really thought this was a bad idea and were against it. So there was a minimal difference between the two, pre and post, but 35% of pre-policy participants thought the policy was a bad idea, and 29% of post-policy participants thought the policy was a bad idea. Okay, so when we're looking at that first qualitative, or first part of the qualitative analysis, when we are asking people to elaborate on why they thought it was a good or bad idea, some of the themes that we saw from why the policy was a good idea was reduced exposure to children, positive health benefits, reduced exposure to secondhand smoke. And a lot of these are very intertwined, right? So, but this is kind of what we were seeing in general from the good responses, certainly an emphasis on children and their health. And then the most common theme as to why the policy was a bad idea was this a violation of rights and people really feeling like their rights were being infringed upon. When we look at the preliminary content analysis of the intervention audio tapes, we see that there's kind of these positive and negative motivators for quitting smoking, which I think is really interesting. So examples of these positive motivators were really kind of revolved around this idea that they were going to get a new place and it was going to be, you know, very nice and they're going to have kind of start fresh and really wanting to keep that nice and be eligible to be in that, to be in a new community like that. But you do see that from these quotes that there might still be some misunderstanding here as to, you know, they still can live in these places if they smoke, they just can't live they can't smoke in the apartment. So, you know, these are positive motivators, but maybe misinformed positive motivators. And then examples of maybe some of the negative motivation, you know, feeling like you're kind of being forced. You're going to be forced out of the development. So there was also a misunderstanding about the policy and not being able to smoke anywhere on the development grounds, kind of being forced out, have to go somewhere else, or maybe you didn't feel safe, and that you had to quit, like, right now in order to get, so that you could stay safe and not have to go walk several blocks to go smoke. So this summary only presents the beginnings of a qualitative analysis, and there's definitely needs to be further exploration of these different themes, to really understand the positive and negative impacts of the policy. So why is this all important? At present, like I had said at the beginning, Boston is the second largest city in the country with such a ban. Approximately 336 housing authorities have implemented a smoking ban across the nation, with 2,000 authorities nationwide. And it appears that HUD is really encouraging this policy change. So as more housing authorities do go smoke-free, you know, what are the things that we can learn from places like Boston that can be implemented or tweaked for other communities? So I think one thing that we're seeing from the data that we looked at here was that there really needs to be an understanding of residents by what the policy means, and that possibly a better understanding of that policy that could lead to more receptivity and acceptability within the community. Because there was a number of people who thought the policy was a good idea, but really understanding what it meant for their smoking, I think, would have really increased that. And this could have that anticipation of the policy having an effect on their interest in quitting. And then something that Boston Housing Authority did do was partner with the Public Health Commission to offer some smoking cessation resources. But I think that this could have been more robust, and in communities as other housing authorities continue to implement these policies, really providing a really strong support. We already know that these communities, for a variety of reasons, aren't accessing resources that are available for smoking cessation. So bringing that in and creating something that's sustainable so that people can continue to get help and not just a couple weeks of NRT or one-time counseling session. And, a model such as the Kick It For Good model, where we're using a peer community health worker model, somebody from the community who was a smoker being trained to counsel other smokers and really relating to them, may be one place to start. That's it.